Why do we cook? We cook for food, for family, and for friends. We cook to bring people together.
Mmm, honey, that looks good. Pardon my fork.
Hello and welcome to Pardon My Fork. And man, this is an exciting one for me because, as you guys know, if you've been watching my social media, I've been barbecuing like crazy. I think I've been trying to get my fix in here before the weather turns, and it is starting to turn here in Oregon, but that's not really slowing me down. I've got my pop-up tent, I've got, you know, the stuff going on, and plus, I'm an Oregonian, so I can stand the rain, you know, but I just am trying to get so much barbecuing done before that weather turns. And honestly, that's why I'm very excited for my guest today. Craig Verhaga, the barbecue ninja, is on the line. Craig, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Andy. Glad to be here, and I appreciate you having me.
Oh, I appreciate you doing it. It's so much fun talking to guys like you, and especially with the experience that you have. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but you've been barbecuing professionally for something like 20 years, haven't you?
Yeah, 24 years, actually.
Wow.
You know, my whole adult life, I've been involved in barbecue and barbecuing professionally. And so, yeah, it's been a passion of mine. And the first time I was in a competition and we did well, I was bit by the bug. So that's just what I've been doing ever since.
So when you did your first competition, was barbecue kind of a new concept to you, or had you already been independently barbecuing and then you decided to go into the competition realm?
Well, I'm like a lot of people, Andy. You know, I grew up and my dad loved to get out in the back, you know, on the back porch and pull his grill out. And I was in a big family, you know, I was the youngest of five boys. So it was a special occasion when that grill got pulled out. You know, it was, it was something that I look forward to. And when I saw that happen, I was automatically gravitated to it. I was on his hip the whole time. I wanted to see what he was doing. And so it started real early, but when we did the competition, it was actually at that point, it was a ragtag bunch of college guys. Basically, we had just got done with college and we knew each other in school, and it was a local competition here in Cleveland, Mississippi, Oktoberfest. And we were like, okay, we'll just, you know, throw a hat in the ring. And we had one guy that, you know, kind of knew what he was doing, and the rest of us were able to manage a fire and you know, hang out and have some beverages. And then that particular competition, we got third overall in that competition. And, you know, that feeling of getting on the stage and grabbing that trophy and the competition part of it. And, it got me right then. So I knew that was something I wanted to do and be involved in. And here I am, you know, 24 years later and running all over the world, cooking barbecue and really enjoying it.
Man, I could see how that would get you instantly hooked. I mean, first competition, getting up there on stage. Now, what do you mean going all over the world and cooking?
Well, I 2 years ago, I was able to, my cooking partner, Leslie Roark Scott, the barbecue princess, was fortunate enough to go to Melbourne, Australia to do an event over there. And we were featured pit masters at the event. And that was real neat. It was real, real neat. It was pretty surreal. You know, here I am, a guy from the Mississippi Delta and flying into Australia. And, of course, you see your picture on the marquee, and it's pretty cool. But other than that, you know, we travel the country throughout the year. I've already this year been to, gosh, New York, New Orleans, Chicago, Denver, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Houston, Texas, Atlanta. Still going to go to St. Simon's Island, Georgia. Let's see, where else? Lynchburg, Tennessee. Boston, going to do a collaboration there with a good friend of mine in Boston. Never been there before. But so that's just kind of where we are now. We're doing more events now, Andy, than we are barbecue competitions. The only really competitions we do anymore is Memphis in May, which is the World Championship, and also we do one here in my local town, the first one we ever cooked in some 24 years ago in Cleveland, Mississippi. So a lot of what we do now is events. It's vending. It's I cook with Ubon's Barbecue of Yazoo, and also I have, like you mentioned, my own brand, the Barbecue Ninja. But we travel the country and we cook barbecue for the masses. And I'll be in Denver. I cooked alligator there. I alligator hunt also. And, in St. Louis in a few weeks, I'll be cooking alligator there. And of course, that's always a showstopper. So that's kind of where we are. We've mutated, should I say, as a team from just your typical competition barbecue team that comes in on Friday, sets up. Competition's over on Saturday and leave. And now we come in, we start cooking a lot of bulk meat for the public to come and buy. We get there on Thursday, set up, and we cook all the way through Sunday and come home on Monday. So a lot more involved what we do now than kind of a quick competition. So we kind of have built our reputation, and the awards we've won over the years has been recognized. And so now we have the ability to share our name and reputation to these events, and it's an attraction.
It seems like, isn't that kind of the ultimate goal? It sounds like you're living the dream of the pitmaster because, you're going to these competitions, of course, for the recognition, but once you get to a level where you can just kind of live and subsist on going and doing what you love as a demo for other people, that has to be, it's probably not something that you thought was a goal when you did that first competition, but now that you're here, does it really feel like you've touched on something that you feel like you can do for the rest of your life?
I feel like, well, I tell you, you say the rest of your life. I'm 48 years old now, and we just did a 3-day event this past weekend, and I tell you, it is grueling. I tell people all the time, the pictures look great, but you don't see the 16-hour, mm-hmm. Day that you're on your feet all day long and you're, cooking and vending. But back to your question, I could see myself doing this, for the rest of my life. Yeah. And I'd want to train me a crew to kind of come in and take some of that time away where I wouldn't have to do it.
But you need interns.
with the popularity of barbecue, when it hit the TVs, with the barbecue shows, and of course we did the Big Apple Barbecue Block Party in New York, and anything that happens in New York pretty much kind of gets recognized, and now you've got the other cities that want to do it or want to duplicate what they're doing, and when all that happened some probably 10, 12 years ago, you started seeing these events pop up, and you started seeing the popularity of it grow, worldwide. No, did not expect to get to this point, but, we made a conscious decision about 10 years ago. Hey, we're going to kind of leave the competition trail to, do this events cooking. So that's what we decided to do.
I love that, man. Was there an intermediate section there where you were doing any, catering, or had you considered maybe starting like a restaurant, or did you just go straight into the demos and the cookouts?
Well, the team that I cook along with, Ubon's Barbecue of Yazoo, actually does have a restaurant in Yazoo City, Mississippi. And yes, we do catering. I say we, I don't have ownership in the restaurant, but, I help do all that. And of course, the restaurant being there in Yazoo. So it opened, I think, 10 or 11 years ago. So even at first, that wasn't, the goal, but just through things happening in life, that opportunity came along to, Gary Roark and Leslie down there. And so they decided to open up the restaurant. That's kind of where it got to. And that's where we are now.
Well, it sure doesn't hurt having you the face of the brand because, man, your barbecue just looks... it always looks incredible. And like you said, I mean, there's a lot of work that people don't see on the back end. But just looking at your photos and seeing what you've done, and I've listened to interviews in the past with you. You were on Tailgate Guys Barbecue Radio. You were on the Barbecue Beat with a friend of mine, Kevin Sandridge.
And yeah, Kevin's a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love listening to interviews with you, and so it's a really interesting time for me now speaking with you on my show, and I'm trying to make sure that my questions are a little bit different from everybody else's. But I feel like you get a lot of the same
questions. Can be different, but the story is going to be the same. So
that's right. Before I get too far into it, so you are a brand ambassador for Royal Oak, which I think is killer. I love using all the Royal Oak stuff. But one thing that I've noticed with your cooks, especially going back the last couple of years, you do a lot of live fire, like open pit, you know, where you've got a fire, you got a bed of charcoal, and then you're just with a grate of meat above it. And I got to tell you, man, I've really gotten into that recently. I got myself a Santa Maria grill, and I've just been using it like crazy. What kind of wisdom can you pass on to some of us that are wanting to do more of that live fire barbecuing?
When it comes to cooking, you know, Andy, my way is not necessarily the right way. And somebody else does something different than I do. It's just because it's different. It's not the wrong way. When you get down to the nuts and bolts of it, it's all time and temperature. And, you know, of course, if you're live fire cooking, you're hot and fast, you're over coals, you know, you have to be aware of what you're doing. You have to be aware of the grill, your hot spots, your cool spots. Cause you know, on a grill, you always want to have both. You want to have a cool spot. I always say you want to have an escape, you know, mm-hmm. in case it does get too hot. You want to be able to get your product over to the cool spot. And, but you know, I'm not reinventing the wheel by any means. The products I use is stuff that you can order. I don't have, and as far as, you know, everybody's like, oh, hey, give us some secrets. Well, nothing we do is really secret. I mean, and these events we do, it's all out in front of you. You know, we've got the grills out front because that's the part of what I enjoy now is the interaction with the public. I mean, you know, they want to see what we're doing. So there it is, you know, it's on the grill. And of course, when I break the flamethrower out, you know, that's always an attention getter. And, but it's real functionable. I mean, it really is, because what it does is it caramelizes the sugars within the sauce and the glaze that we use. And it's a flavor profile that's on the chicken or the pork or whatever, or the alligator that I use the flamethrower on. And so, you know, everybody's like, oh, is that just for the show? Or, you know, yeah, but it also creates a flavor profile on the meat that we're cooking. So, yeah, it's very functionable too.
The photos of you busting out the flamethrower, I have a similar setup when I'm trying to light my stuff up. But I noticed, well, you said the magic word, by the way, alligator. And as I was going back through some of your photos and stuff, I was like, oh, wow. Because you started talking about having alligator tags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you actually go out and hunt your alligators.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of what started the whole cooking alligators was just the fact that, you know, matter of fact, this weekend, I leave tomorrow to go to my hunting camp. We got one more tag to fill. We you know, harvested two alligators 2 weeks ago. And you know, if you're going to hunt them, and it's like anything I hunt, deer, duck, or dove, or quail, or anything else. I mean, you know, we harvest them, we clean them, we cook them, and we eat them. And everything is treated with the utmost respect and treated properly through the whole process. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's food for my table. You know, it's food for my family. And so that's why it has to be treated that way. But of course, when you put an alligator in front of somebody, it's going to have the wow factor. I mean, it really is. And that's just part of it, but it's also really, really good. And I've created a recipe, where I stuffed the alligator tail, and it's a combination of boudin and cream cheese and jalapeno and spicy ranch dressing, and there's a few other things in there that I stuff the tail with. So when it's done, we take that stuffing, we chop up the alligator tail, and make an alligator roll with it. Put it on a hot dog bun. So that you know, you're just getting a lot of different elements of flavor, and it really, you know, makes the alligator stand out also. But love cooking it. You know, I love hunting them. Let me tell you, mm-hmm. there's no bigger adrenaline rush when you got a 10, 12 foot alligator on the hook and you see it come to the top of the water and there it is. And it's right in front of you. And then you harvest the beast and hey, you know, you've accomplished your object.
That's pretty wild, man. I couldn't imagine doing something like that, but now you've kind of got me wanting to.
Well, I tell you, and you can only imagine, you know, when I travel around and I go everywhere, everybody's like, man, I want to go alligator hunting with you. I want to go alligator hunting with you. And, you know, it's only a 3-week season. And, you know, so you got very, very short, limited amount of time. And you can't take everybody. Mm-hmm. You only have, about 6 spots and 2 boats that you can do. But I always tell anybody, if you get the opportunity, definitely go, because the way we hunt them is different what you see on TV. You know, what you see on TV, they're actually fishing for alligator. They're hanging lines with chicken or some other fish or something like that, and the alligator, you know, swallows the bait and is waiting there on the line for them, and they come and, you know, harvest them then. But we go out at night, and, you know, we flashing, you know, Q-beams, spotlights, and when their eyes shine, you know, we kind of get over close to them, and I've got a snag rod. You throw it over the back of the alligator, reel it in, and when you hit it, you just, you know, set the hook in it, wherever it is, tail, head, neck, back, and depending on the size, depends on how long you're about to fight. Mm-hmm. And of course, you got the drag set, and you just let it run, and eventually, it'll wear itself out. And when that happens, you know, we got a throw line, we drag the bottom, then we hook it, bring it to the top. It does its death roll, and it'll be worn out then, and put a noose on it, and then harvest it. It sounds easy, but it can be very difficult, as you can imagine.
Oh, yeah, it's anything less than easy. I mean, hey, listen, we raise chickens and ducks here, and even harvesting one of my chickens that I've raised, it's not an easy thing to do because you're right there, you're face-to-face. But I think it gives you a better appreciation for the product. It gives you a better appreciation for what the animal is doing for you. You know, it's a much more, as a matter of fact, unpopular opinion here, but I think just about anybody that eats meat needs to harvest their own at some point, just so that they know exactly what that sacrifice is.
Exactly. And a lot of the animals that we do hunt, kind of, it's a way of life here. I mean, you know, it's what I've grown up doing since I was a kid. I mean, but a lot of the animals that we hunt, you know, deer and stuff like that, you know, we watch throughout the year. We got cameras, or, you know, the alligators we see when we're fishing, we kind of know them, and you know, we kind of know when they're at the maturity level that they need to be taken, and so it's not just like, you know, it all of a sudden happens. You know, we feed the deer and make sure that they're healthy, and, you know, the other animals that we, you know, we harvest, and same way, you know, we make sure their habitat is optimal for them to live in, so they'll be the best they can be when we go to harvest them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the complete opposite of the monoculture that we see today. It's the same reason why, you know, grass-fed beef is going to taste so much better than something that just comes out of a generic stockyard, you know. But I like where your head's at with that. I really appreciate that you, as a professional barbecuer, come at it from that stance. That's really good, and I like that.
Well, and that's been kind of my mindset here for the last few years is a lot of people in barbecue, they hunt also, but it's almost like when barbecue ends, then they don't show the hunting part and the harvesting and how that can can intertwine, you know, with the traditional barbecue. And that's one of my big goals and things that I'm doing. You can see on my Facebook page, you know, I got recipes on there, not only on alligator, but venison, duck, a lot of other things that is not your traditional chicken, brisket, rib, pork butt, whole hog. You know, it's actually something different. And that's what I want to bring, is something different, you know? And so I've enjoyed doing that because it's something I was doing anyway. And, now I just want to bring attention to it. So it's going good.
Is there any connection then between you, you know, going out and hunting and harvesting your own and cooking over a live fire? I'm asking just because me personally, I kind of wanted to get back to a very traditional way of cooking, not really for any health reasons, but just because I wanted to see if I could do it. And I was really intrigued by it. Is there any connection there?
Well, it is. I mean, because it's a known thing that your venison is your most lean meat. It's your natural stuff. And same way with, you know, quail or duck. I mean, they're consuming grains. They're consuming, you know, natural products. So, of course, no steroids, no nothing introduced to them that is not natural like that. So there's definitely a connection there of doing the, you know, so for lack of a better word, from the woods to the plate, you know, or as I say with alligators, from swamp to table.
And doing everything in the most kind of natural and traditional way, even when it comes to cooking over a live fire.
Yeah, and I tell you, you were talking about the ambassadorship with Royal Oak, which has been an awesome thing, and kind of doing what I'm doing also has given me the opportunity to kind of partner or consult for different companies on different things, Old Hickory Pits with the pits that we use, and I'm also doing consulting for Four Roses Bourbon, developing I have developed a glaze that's Four Roses Bourbon Chipotle glaze, and that I've been using on chicken, and also when I go to St. Louis here in a couple of weeks, I'm going to glaze the alligator with that because it's a good sweet, and also the Chipotle gets it spicy, but also having that Four Roses Bourbon in there is going to, when I hit it with that flamethrower, it's going to bring out that caramel and vanilla flavor from the bourbon. And so, you know, it's given me the opportunity to be able to experiment, but and to use different products in different ways and have a lot of fun doing what I'm doing. But also thinking out of the box, so to speak. Because I also have done a venison backstrap that I harvested myself. And I soaked it in Four Roses bourbon for about 3 hours to infuse the bourbon in the venison backstrap, and then put a steak rub on it and cooked it caveman style directly over the Royal Oak lump charcoal, because it's all natural. People look at that caveman style, they're like, oh, it's going to get ash on it, but it's all natural. So it's not, it's just like it burning over the top of it, and I mean there's ash that's going to get on it when it's not touching it. So but it was a real cool way to use that and to, you know, cook with different stuff. I mean, with Ubon's, we have a Bloody Mary mix that we do a Bloody Mary salad, we do a we actually have a Bloody Mary sauce that we use, and so, you know, our motto is cook with it. You know, experiment, have fun. So that's kind of all we do with a lot of different things.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. And I have to come back around to the alligator. I'm sorry. I know you have recipes online.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. The alligator is definitely it's my thing, and it is a thing.
I mean, I'm really interested in the technique that you use to cook it. Is there a way that you kind of would prefer, like if someone, let's pretend I had an alligator here and I wanted to cook it, and I could choose between my offset smoker, pellet grill and my Santa Maria grill. Let me know which one you'd prefer that I cook it over, and would you have any seasoning recommendations for something like that?
As far as cooking technique in a preferred way, the last three or maybe four times I've cooked an alligator, I've cooked on a different smoker. I cooked two in New York when I did an event up there, and I cooked it on an old hickory CTO double wide. I cooked one with Matt Pittman over there at Meat Church, and I did it on an offset. And I just cooked three alligators in Denver on a Rectech wild side, you know, rotisserie. But with that, I had to actually cut the head off and cut the tail off and, you know, cook those separately just because the 5-foot alligator wouldn't fit on it. And so I cooked the, you know, tail on the old hickory, and it's all time and temperature, Andy. I mean, it's just getting it to the optimal temperature that you want internally. Mm-hmm. And there's no wrong way. As a matter of fact, every way I've talked is right. It's just what you got and what you prefer to cook on, and of course, what it'll fit on. Because mainly what I cook is you have to get the farm raised alligators to, you know, to cook for the public. You can't just go kill one in the water and, you know, take it up to St. Louis and feed a bunch of people at a big event. So you actually have to get a farm raised alligator. And they're normally, you know, 40 pounds, 5 feet long. And as far as dry rub, I use RU Bonds dry rub, and I also like to go a little sweet with it. So we'll add a little brown sugar on it. And of course, at the end, I like to glaze it and hit it with the flamethrower. Mm-hmm. and finish it off like that, because that gets a good caramelization and gets that brulee, so to speak, on that skin. So, but that's pretty much the technique I use. And I like to split the tail and put that stuffing down the tail and have it cook in with the, you know, with the alligator.
Great use of the word brulee, by the way. That's I applaud you. Nicely done.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I got a little. Well, I don't have any French in me, but anyway, that's the only French word I know. But that's what it does. I mean, it's the same principle as a cream brulee. I mean, you're caramelizing and charring those sugars that's in that barbecue sauce or in that rub, and that's the flavor that you're going to get, is that good sugary char that is a different flavor profile. You want layers of flavor. You want the smoke to be a flavor. You want the dry rub to be a flavor. You want the glaze to be a flavor. So it's just the layering of flavors when you're cooking throughout the process that, you know, that gets you that end result, that gets you that very savory, great tasting product.
And so I'm guessing that you don't really subscribe too much to hot and fast versus low and slow. You probably just embrace either or depending on your situation. Am I right?
That you hit the nail on the head. It depends on the situation. It depends on when it needs to be done, how fast it needs to be done. I totally adjust. I've got no set exact one way to do anything. My motto is I'll get it done. You know, however it needs to be done. You know, if we got to get it done in an hour, I'll cut it up in thin, you know, small pieces, and we'll, you know, we'll cook it fast over the grill. Or so, yeah, it's just, and that's the fun of cooking. It's not being set one way in your way and saying that's the only way, because it's a huge world out there cooking, and you know, it's you just have fun with it and enjoy it.
People seem to feel like the hot and fast method is much trickier and much more difficult to learn than the low and slow. Did you find that when you were coming up, or was it just kind of all the same to you?
I tell you, Andy, the hot and fast really has not become a thing until probably the last, man, I'll say probably 5 years or so. For the longest time, you never saw anybody with a barrel. You never saw anybody cutting a smoker up above 250. And all of a sudden, you know, that became a real thing. And now And the reason it caught on, I feel like, and it's my opinion only, is because that style of cooking actually gives the meat a different flavor.
Mm-hmm.
It does. It's more of a char almost. It's almost like grilling, where the low and slow doesn't give that flavor. So if you're in a competition, and I've judged many of them, I'm you know, MBN, KCBS certified. So when you taste that hot and fast, it's a different flavor. So you can imagine all these judges that have gone all these years tasting, you know, the low and slow and not having that flavor profile. And then all of a sudden, bam, we got something new here and it's good. So it started winning and winning very consistently. And now it's a thing. I mean, it's not only a fad, it's a style, and it's good. It's really good. And that's just really my opinion on how the popularity of the hot and fast has really caught on, because it's different and it's a good difference. And so the judges have really responded to it. And when that happens, you know, we're in a copycat thing when it comes to competition barbecue. If somebody's winning with it, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're cooking in a barrel? Well, that's what I'm going to do, because you're winning.
Oh, man, it's so funny you say the barrel, because I talk about that quite often here. The barrel is just so up and coming. And as a matter of fact, I'm building a barrel to put on the back of my trailer smoker. My wife was just like, why would you do that? Like, you've got reverse flow offset big smoker and you got the Santa Maria on the same trailer. And I'm like, well, you know, some situations require something different. And especially, you know, everybody knows now that the barrel is something that you can kind of set and forget, which is nice.
Exactly.
But I actually have two questions for you. First of all, you, with the experience that you have in barbecue, do you feel like you can tell when someone has cooked low and slow versus hot and fast in the flavor?
I feel like I can. I really do. That the hot and fast, I mean, just the whole concept is a different flavor profile. It's a little more of a char or a charcoal kind of flavor profile, where you're low and slow, you're not creating that flavor profile. And I feel like, also go back to what I said earlier, that difference and that flavor profile being so different, and it's good, is what really, really started scoring those teams doing that high, and they started winning. And then, what do you, you know, you're walking by, okay, that team's won the last three contests. You know, they got these barrels out here. That's what, you know, we need to get a barrel. that's how competition barbecue goes, you know. It's, what are you winning on? Okay, well, I'm going to get one of those. Or even the, you know, even the Old Hickories or the, you know, Meyer Mixons or some of these other ones that have the ability to turn up and cook at 325 or, you know, 350 or something like that. Well, you know, they just crank those dudes up and they cook hot and fast and put them on the top rack and, you know, get that, you know, get that sear flavor, and they're duplicated.
How do you feel about moisturizing the meat when it's hot and fast? I know a lot of people will do spritzes. They'll spray. It's like every half an hour they're opening their pit to spray it down. You mentioned the Myron Mixon smokers. Those have a built-in water pan and they have an automatic, you know, water fill. What do you subscribe to as far as keeping your meat moisturized if you're trying to do that hot and fast method?
With competition barbecue, of course, I don't do that much anymore. But when we did, and I was a rib cooker, and we used the spritz method, you know, we use that. And then, of course, when you go to either wrap ribs or wrap your butts or wrap brisket or anything else, you introduce moisture or liquid in there at that time, be it a marinade, apple juice, butter, you know, it's very popular. Mm. So, you know, that's another way to get moisture into the meat or on the meat is through that wrapping process. Of course, now, you know, it's a big thing of everybody wrapping in butcher paper. So it just, what that does is it holds moisture in, it steams the meat. So it's taking, you know, the cooking process is taking it out, but the wrapping process is putting it back in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the best way to, you know, keep moisture and have moisture in your meat is through that wrapping process.
And so you mentioned apple juice.
Yeah, just apple juice and, you know, U-bonds, we got a marinade. that we'd also put in there. And we put a little of our dry rub in there to dilute into it. And that's what we would spritz with.
I gotcha. I have noticed some people adding vinegar to their spritz, and I've tried it a couple times. I don't feel like I can taste the vinegar. I don't really know that it's doing anything. How do you feel about vinegar-based sauces? Is that something that you mess with?
Vinegar-based sauces is really, I'm partial to it, actually, because the Yuban sauce that I know and that I love is, it's not a vinegar, it's kind of a hybrid sauce. It's a tomato vinegar hot sauce. So it's got the sweet element, it's got the heat element in there, but it's that vinegar in a sauce, that tang, that pop, I feel like is very, I say it's important. It's what everybody, you know, gets used to or what they like, but vinegar in a sauce, it's acidic. It's a natural, you know, meat tenderizer. So that's why a lot of people use the vinegar. It's for that reason, because it's, you know, it's a natural meat tenderizer. I've even known people that would dump a gallon of vinegar in their water pan. So when it's cooking and that vinegar and that acidic is boiling, it goes into the meat and helps tenderize the meat. So, but that's, you know, that's a theory, and I've seen it done. I've seen it done a lot. So, just one thing that's out there.
Interesting. And would you consider that a Mississippi style, kind of like there's a Texas style and a North Carolina style and a South Carolina style? Is there a Mississippi style barbecue sauce? Is that kind of what we're talking about?
Well, Mississippi style is kind of a hybrid between your Carolina vinegar and your Mrs. Sweet. We're kind of right there in the middle, where we do have the vinegar tang of the Carolina, but we also like our barbecue sweet. So that's what kind of brings in that Memphis style element to it too. But we would like to think that, yeah, our style is unique to Mississippi. And when we travel the country and cook everywhere, that's one of our things that we put out there in the advertising, is we're bringing Mississippi style barbecue to you, you know? But it is a thing, and we feel like it works great for us.
Yeah, well, it's hitting all of those high notes. You're hitting the sweet, you're hitting the salty, you're hitting the acidic, you're bringing all of those flavor components together instead of just, you know, oh, we've got this straight vinegar, or we've got this mustard sauce, or whatever. You're kind of marrying, I feel like, all of the things that our tongues really respond to.
Right. And that's another thing with you know, the backyard cooker or what have you. Experiment with things, you know, experiment with rubs. There's so many great rubs, and there's so many great sauces out on the market. People feel like, you know, they've got to go and get, you know, 40 different products, you know, as far as vinegar and tomato paste and sugar and onion powder, and make their own and see how it turns out. Well, they're going to go through a lot of product trying to get something that's pretty good, when there's so many out there that are really, really good that you can use to make your own. You know, you can add jellies, you can add hot sauces, you can add, you know, different flavor profiles until you kind of come to find what you want and what you like. And that just, there's so much out there that's really good. Use one, but you can adjust it to what you like as far as your flavor and go with it. You know, it's not too difficult.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, you're dropping the barbecue wisdom today, son.
Well, it's just, like I said, I enjoy what I do. And you know, I've got people that, you know, direct message me all the time about, hey, what about this or that? Man, I don't mind at all answering any questions anybody's got anytime. And I try to be accessible to do that. Because, you know, Gary Rowart, Poppy, that taught me, you know, everything I know, that's the way he was. He was an open book. Somebody walked over and had a question about something, he'd answer it. Even if it was exactly what he did, he'd answer it just like that. And, you know, you still got to cook it. Mm-hmm. You still got to get it right, you know. So that's just the way I am, you know, open book.
I like that, man. It's a very yes and way of living. And I assume that has really lent to how far you've taken this whole thing, the TV spots and the, you know, traveling around the country and now around the world and things, right?
It is. One thing about U-Bonds, and it's our saying is we take our front porch wherever we go. And it doesn't matter if it's in Denver or Chicago or New York. If we're set up there, if you see us, come over, have a drink, we'll sit down, we'll visit. That's just the way that we've always been. You know, our front porch is open. And we've got friends all over the world now for that very reason. And that's barbecue. That's the number one enjoyment of barbecue is the people. And, you know, Poppy used to always say that, you know, all these trophies we've won, the real trophy is the people that we met along the way and the friends we made.
Mm-hmm. That's a fact, man.
Sorry, Andy. I get a little emotional.
No problem at all, man. I really love that, and I love how it's really just coming from your heart. I do appreciate that very much.
Yeah. Well, we miss him.
Yeah. Well, it has taken you a long ways, and I would be remiss if I didn't talk to you a little bit about your time on Chop Grill Masters. That was in 2017, right?
2017, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got to tell me about that, man. I've talked to a number of different people who have been on, you know, different Food Network shows. We recently had Kathy Pullen on, and she's done Guy's Grocery Games. And I really like talking to people about what their experience was kind of behind the scenes, because it's just such a different, I don't know, it's a different scenario that you're cooking in, but at the same time, you kind of got to get your mind out of all of the production stuff and back into, hey, this is just the same cook that I always do. I'm here for a reason. You seem like the kind of person that would be able to do that pretty easily, like switch back to, hey man, we're cooking and that's what we're doing. Let's go. Did you find it difficult to get into that mode when you were working around, you know, the TV cameras and the set and crew and stuff?
That part wasn't all that difficult. I mean, it was just, you kind of go into a zone, so to speak. I mean, you just kind of, it all happened so fast. You know, it was like they picked us up at 4:30 in the morning, and then I was back at the hotel that afternoon, almost like, what the heck just happened? You know, it's just a blur. But it was a wonderful experience. I really, really enjoy it. And a matter of fact, to go back a little bit, I told you I was doing an event in Boston next month. Andy Husband was on my episode of Chop Grill Masters. It's his restaurant I'm going to. So You build all kind of relationships, great relationships through doing something like that. And, but on set, I mean, it is what you see on TV. It's an open the basket and you got to go. And you probably have along the way kind of got in your mind a few things wrapped, so to speak, that you can take with whatever product is in the basket. So, you know, that's the only preset that you've got in your mind. Because once that basket opens, you don't know what's in there. And you got to figure it out really, really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And the time, if I give anybody any advice that may be doing this, practice against the clock.
Right.
That is, the clock is the real beast in the whole deal. You know, you go to that appetizer round and you got 20 minutes, and that's not that long. As a matter of fact, on set, it feels about like 20 seconds. it just really flies. And so you got to go from all the way to getting the stuff out of the basket to going to the pantry, going from the pantry, prep work. You know, and then after the prep work, you got to actually do the cooking in 20 minutes. I mean, it's real that the clock is the beast. There's no doubt about it. And it was a great experience. It really was. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Now, I made it through the first round and got to the second round. And I don't know if they were after me or what. I don't want to say that. But anyway, they put a vegan lobster in my basket. And, you know, I'm from the Mississippi Delta and I'm a redneck man. And, you know, we're not much on anything around here, understanding vegan easy, you know. So I'm looking down in the basket you know, and there is a, looks like a rubber lobster, you know, down in this basket, man. And I'm like, what the heck is this? You know, of course, Ted Allen, he's like, hey, I'm a vegan lobster. And I'm like, I'm kind of looking around like, what in the world is this? And it had the texture of rubber, like a pencil eraser. And it had the flavor of like imitation crappie. And so that stumped me pretty good there. But I thought I did pretty good with it. I mean, I cut it up in pieces. I put it in a blender and I made a salad dressing out of it. I did a rendition of a salad dressing with lemon and I had some acid in there with some, cider vinegar, had some fresh herbs in there and, you know, did a Caesar salad with it. But hey, my salad wasn't all that great, but it was, yeah, it was a grilling show, but I kind of got chopped from my salad. but anyway, it was funny. Just yeah, it was one of the little things in the show, you know. And I'm like, I'm from the Mississippi Delta. We don't have vegan lobster in the Mississippi Delta, you know. So, as a matter of fact, you know, I'm sure we do have vegans, but not a lot of them. And yeah. But it was a stump there, but great experience. Wonderful experience, and gotten to know a lot of people through that. And but if anybody's thinking about doing it, pay attention to that clock.
Yep. That's what we say about the World Food Championships, even, because when you're cooking there, that time goes so much faster than you think it does. And if you haven't tried making it against the clock, you're going to be in for a big surprise. Now, you being a world-class barbecuer, it probably didn't affect you all that much, but I was a little curious how it felt, you know, sitting there cooking in front of Myron Mixon with all of his, you know, credibility and the face that he has out in the public, you know?
Well, Myron and I are actually good friends. We cook alongside each other for many, many years. So when I did walk out and saw Myron sitting there, you know, it was one of those, he kind of shot a wink at me and I shot one back, and and him and Poppy, Gary Woolart, that I cooked with, were great friends. And so, you know, and barbecue world, it's a small world. It really, it's a big world, but it's also a small world. And so, you know, as far as that, what was a little different is the other three competitors on my show, I didn't know them. I didn't know any of them. Which I kind of found, you know, being in it so long, I found a little odd, but, you know, Megan Day was one of them, and, you know, she's a KCBS cook and from Kansas City, and Barn Goddess, gosh, I'm trying to remember her name. She's from Florida. She, you know, I didn't know her. She cooks the Florida circuit. And the other guy was Andy Husbands, who's got, you know, a restaurant in Boston, and he cooks primarily KCBS. And we've always cooked MB and Memphis Barbecue Network. So I didn't know any of these guys. And I just kind of, you know, you get in the van in the morning to go to the set and you jump in there and you look around and you're like, okay. You know, I don't know any of these people. So that was, I guess that was good in a way too, because, you know, there was really no distractions or anything else because I didn't know them and just wanted to beat them.
Right. There wasn't any like, oh no, I'm going to be competing against my friends. You were just like, who are these people?
Exactly. And so, that was fun. It was a good time.
That's really funny. That's really interesting. When you made your way back home, I mean, was it one of those things where you were like, yeah, I want to do that again? Or was it just kind of like, okay, I've done it, now I can go back to my life?
Well, kind of both, really. You know, it was, I really enjoy what I'm doing now. I mean, that's my thing as far as doing these events and getting out in front of the people and, you know, that's what I really enjoy doing. The TV was fun. I'll definitely do it again. There's some things out there now that couldn't work out. So I'd love to do it again, but it just wasn't my thing. Like, doing these events is my thing. Now, my cooking partner, Leslie Scott, she's done a lot of shows. And she likes that camera and she's good with it. And, you know, those time constraints doesn't bother her, and so that's kind of more her thing, where the events are more my thing. So But I'll do it again. I'd love to do it again, and I'm sure I will.
You like that crowd engagement, don't you?
I do. It's the people. Rollo did a bandana for me with my logo on there. And man, I go and I try to hand them out to kids and seeing them put on that bandana and act like the barbecue ninja or whatever. That's real cool stuff. That's what I'm really getting into. And I gave a few of them out when we were out in Idaho, and I had a message from a lady saying, "Hey, my kids are going to be the barbecue ninja at Halloween." It's that engagement with the public and, making those friends along the way and just getting to know as many people as I can along the way. That's what I enjoy about it. And that's why I do it.
Yeah, I love that. I love hearing that. It's been so good talking to you, Craig, because you've got kind of that family cook feel. I mean, and I mean this in the best way. So take it with good intentions. You're like that grandma that cooks so well and has so much good advice for people, and they just love going over to grandma's house and eating a good meal and hearing the stories about the old days.
Well, it's what I was taught. It's what Poppy taught me, and now his grandson, Jacob Scott's coming up. He's the next generation. Everything that Poppy instilled in me, I'm instilling in Jacob, and that's, the people part of it, the hard work, the work ethic, very important. You can't ask anybody to do anything you're not willing to do yourself. And also just the fact that, he's carrying the torch, and he's got to set the example. So all I'm doing is passing along what somebody passed to me. It was a wonderful gift to me, and all I can do is be blessed enough to hand it to somebody else. So that's the whole premise behind what we're doing and my mindset.
Nice. You're a good man, and I appreciate talking to you. Hey, go ahead and throw out some places where people can find you and what you've got going on.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to. My Instagram is at the BBQ Ninja, and my Twitter is at the_BBQ_Ninja. I've got a Facebook page that is the BBQ Ninja, and that's where you can find me on all the social media. And like I said, I try to be as engaging as possible. So jump on there and give me a follow. And got any questions, hit me up. And coming up, we've got, we're actually going to St. Louis to do Q in the Lou the last weekend of this month. I think it's the 25th, 6th, 7th. And then going to St. Simon's Islands for the Firebox Festival, the first weekend in October. Second weekend in October, be here locally in Cleveland, Mississippi. Then go to Boston the third week in October to do a collaboration at the Smoke Shop. And then going to Judge the Jack in Lynchburg the last weekend in October. And that kind of winds up my year. I hunt from November, December, January, and then start it all back over when I go to the Houston Livestock and Rodeo in February. And that's always a wonderful time because I get to meet people from all over the world there and get to know them.
Oh, that is very cool. If any of you guys listening are anywhere near where Craig is going to be, you have got to go and check it out and swing by and just give him a fist bump for everything that he does. And of course, go and check out his Instagram and his Facebook and his Twitter, because you are posting up, Craig, all kinds of pictures all the time. And it is so much fun seeing all that stuff. And of course, we will have links to everything that Craig is doing underneath this episode on pardonmyfork.com. Craig, once again, thank you so much. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Hey, Andy, thanks for having me, bud. Have a good one.
And there he goes. Really fun conversation. Can't thank him enough for coming on the show. And please do go and check his social media out, because seriously, you guys, he is doing some really cool stuff, and it always looks so good. It's just outrageous how good this stuff looks. And I'll tell you what, I think I'm going to steal some of his techniques. That bruleeing of the sauce on top of like chicken wings. Oh, yeah, I got to try that. I have to try it. Look forward to those photos sometime this week on pardonmyfork.com. That's where you're not just going to find this episode, but all of the previous episodes, head on over to our social media pages on Facebook at Pardon My Fork and on Instagram at Pardon My Fork. Check out what we've been doing. I've been grilling up a storm. Seriously, no lie, I have been trying to grill nonstop in preparation for the end of summer. You know that it's not going to stop me from grilling, but it's just going to put a little damper on things. But anyways, big thanks to Craig. Big thanks to our show partner, Four Roses Bourbon. You can find them at fourrosesbourbon.com. And of course, a huge thanks to you guys. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for telling a friend. For Craig, this is Andy, and we will see you next time.